The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
From Memphis, Tennessee, on the banks of the mighty Mississippi, it's America's conservative blowtorch.
That's us, that's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah.
Good afternoon. I'm Mary Walters, sitting in the seat for Todd Starnes. I am so excited. I've known Todd since Fox. We were both at Fox, and I've gotten to know Todd better as the years have gone on. And I am so honored to be sitting in the seat, and I hope I do him justice. Since this is my first time hosting Todd's show, please bear with me as I try to figure out all the moving parts. Every show is different. And I know you can go over to the live show blog at toddstarnes.com. And also, if you go to Todd Starnes Facebook page, you can leave comments there. And I will try to, as the show goes on, get your comments as we go on. Now, if you've ever heard me host on any of the shows, whether it was a regular show with my regular show or whether it's filling in for someone, I love to hear from you, because I think that people who listen to talk radio and are talk radio fanatics tend to be very informed people. And so I believe that you can always bring something new to the conversation. I know some hosts, you know, they love to talk. I like to talk with you because, again, I think that a lot of you have a different viewpoint than I do, or maybe look at something differently and can open up a whole new path of discussion. And maybe something that I haven't thought of, other listeners haven't thought of. So I always find it informative. So I'm going to give you the number and you can feel free to jump in. 844-747-8868. 844-747-8868. And I will try to get to your calls as quickly as I can. But again, just please bear with me. Now, coming up in the show, we have Steve Moore, economist, because there are now fears of inflation. You know, Jimmy Carter all over again. Yippee. Happy days are here again. So we're going to talk to Steve about how well-founded those fears of inflation are and what we could be looking at down the road. We're also going to be joined by Congresswoman Ashley Hinson. She is the one who sponsored that bill that would keep Kamala Harris from traveling to Europe unless she goes to the border first. Taxpayer money would not pay for her to go anywhere but the border. We'll find out what happened with that and what the idea was behind that. And also, we're going to be joined by columnist Liz Peek. We're going to get into all of the news with her. And trust me, there's a lot of news. So let's get to it, shall we? So let's start with Joe Biden at the G7, because I just love this. I adore Joe Biden at the G7. Now, before Joe Biden went, the media, of course, was doing what they usually do, which is fawning all over Joe Biden. Now, let's start with that. This is from Sky News Australia. Now, to be fair, Sky News tends to be a more conservative outlet. And they were on Sky News yesterday, and they were discussing the coverage that our media gave to Joe Biden. Here's what they had to say.
I want to go to the US now, because the media has been gushing as their beloved Joe Biden prepares for his trip to the United Kingdom to attend the G7 summit. Listen to how CNN is reporting this momentous event.
Joe Biden is stepping onto the world stage for the first time as president, an equal to foreign leaders.
Now, let's go back in time to 2018 and see if those same newsrooms offered the presidency of Donald Trump such light and positive coverage.
Dramatic and deepening G7 divide, better put perhaps, as G6 versus one.
Yes, because everybody loves Joe Biden. The world loves Joe Biden as much as Joe Biden loves Joe Biden. You know, Joe Biden, at least for me, has always thought that he should be president. Like, he was due this. He sat in the seat for almost 50 years, right? Over four decades, he sat in Congress. And gosh darn it, he deserves to be president. And I really think that's how he feels. And it doesn't matter whether he doesn't know where he is. You saw him wander into a restaurant at the G7, wandered into the wrong place. And he's like, you know, among regular diners, looking lost and confused and doing that Joe Biden, where the heck am I? And Jill, his caretaker, had to come and get him. And, you know, somebody asked him a question. He answered, I think it was a reporter who happened to be eating, and he answered it. So it doesn't matter to Joe Biden that this is just embarrassing and cringeworthy so often, because I just don't think he realizes how cringeworthy it is and how oof it is. But Sky News, not afraid to say it. This is Kenny on Media, and you'll often hear, if you're on social media, you'll hear a lot of Kenny on Media cuts, because he does call it like it is, at least how we see it. Those of us on the right see it, and I am willing to admit that maybe my view is a tad skewed. He said they drive to give the illusion that he doesn't have any disputes with any of these international leaders. One of the women who was also on the show, her name is Sophie Ellsworth. She is a writer. And she said that Biden was extremely lucky to have such loyal media on his side, and it's going to result in higher popularity thanks to his fans in the journalist sector, which is very true. Look at Joe Biden's popularity. It's not where it should be, because we all have friends who are liberal and who voted for Joe Biden, or who consider themselves independent but are never Trumpers. So they voted for Joe Biden, and they refuse to acknowledge that he's doing anything wrong. No, he's fine. He's great. He's very statesmanlike. Yeah, it's great. She said, it's really quite appalling to watch. I should do it in an Australian accent. And what happened to straight news reporting that doesn't seem to be existent there, meaning here in the U.S.? Nick Carter is the Menzies Research Center, and said Trump can do no right, yet there are considerable question marks over Biden's foreign affairs policies. They're not proven yet. And he went on to talk about Trump's strength in foreign affairs in comparison with Biden, including his show of strength against China. He gave him credit for the Abraham Accords, which you will never hear American media do. He also, Cater, said that Biden hasn't demonstrated whether or not he's going to be able to utilize American strength in order to maintain us as a world leader on the global stage, or if he's just going to sit back and go along to get along, because one of the latest polls I saw, over 40% of people think that Joe Biden has some form of dementia and he's going to be negotiating with Putin. That's why there's no joint presser after the meeting with Putin, because Joe Biden, his people, his handlers, his wife know exactly how he's going to look next to Vladimir Putin in a presser, being asked questions from the press. It's going to be a goat rodeo. It's going to be disastrous, and they know it. He got lost on the way to the cafeteria. Have you noticed Jill Biden is with him every single step of the way? When he landed in the UK, they were out at an airfield, and he was speaking to, I guess it was American troops there. I didn't pay that much attention to it, truth be told. But I did see, I was watching the beginning of it, and he's somebody yelled at him from behind him, and he turns around and starts talking to him. Joe Biden gets up and makes opening remarks. I don't remember a first lady having that position. I don't remember a first lady doing anything like that before. Not even some of the more active first ladies like Michelle Obama, Hillary Clinton. I don't remember them traveling with their husbands and speaking to people. You know, they stood there and they smiled and waved and did what the first ladies do, and that's that. But Jill Biden is constantly giving speeches. She's constantly by Joe Biden's side. She never leaves him. And I think there is a very scary reason for that. I really do. If you want to jump in here, 844-747-8868 is the number. And this gentleman from Australia, Nikator of the Menzies Research Center on Sky News, said, I would be much happier to see Donald Trump at the G7. They go on to point out about how CNN's ratings have just cratered to record lows in the post-Trump era. And that's because CNN, like so many outlets, were so vested in anti-Trump, orange man bad, and just beating that over and over and over again. There was no thinking, there was no journalism, there was no thought process going on whatsoever. All they did is anything that Trump said, they just bashed it. It was terrible, it was bad. And that's all they did. They didn't need to talk about policy. They didn't need to do anything. They sat back for 4 years on autopilot just bashing Trump with no thought whatsoever. They could have been hypocritical. They could have been pointed out as being hypocrites. They could be wrong, as we know they often were wrong, and they keep getting called out for being wrong over and over and over again. Didn't care, because they were feeding a narrative to the people who suffer from Trump derangement syndrome, which, by the way, I do think is legitimate. I think it's a real thing. They were just feeding that narrative to those people who wanted to hear that narrative over and over and over again and just wanted to be told, no, your thought process is right. The way you feel that Trump is mad, Trump is bad, Orange Man is bad, that way you feel is right. That's the correct posture to have. That's the group that they were feeding. And now that Trump is no longer in office, they have nothing. They would actually have to go back to, you know, paying attention and reporting some of the news, but just constantly saying Joe Biden good, Joe Biden good. There's nothing exciting about that. It doesn't get them tuning in to hear, you know, to have their, their values and their beliefs reasserted over and over, reconfirmed over and over and over again. It was just 4 years of confirmation bias, and the left fed off of it. The far left fed off it because they it was comforting to them. It was like a warm blanket in a nice steaming hot cup of cocoa to them. Now that Trump's not there, I don't really think they're all that vested in Joe Biden. I just think, and for some of them, he's not left enough. He's not far enough left. So for some of them, it's not even confirmation bias anymore. It's just nothing, because they don't think they're excited about Joe Biden. Some of them don't even like him because he's not far left enough. So CNN is rudderless. They have nothing. And at least they have the guts to point this out on Sky News, which good for them. I think that's fantastic. Coming up, we've got Joe Biden's most awkward moments and bloopers while on the world stage. So we have that for you. We have a compilation, so that'll be fun. And we're going to talk about some of those. I'm sure you've seen some of them on social media making the rounds, and we are going to talk about them. If you'd like to join me, 844-747-8868. Don't forget the live show blog at toddstarnes.com. And you can also go to the Todd Starnes Facebook page and comment there as well. And like I said, I'm going to try to get all of them and try to get as many comments on air as I can. I'm Mary Walters, sitting in for Todd Starnes on the Todd Starnes Show.
About to back up and bring it. It's Todd Starnes.
Hi, this is Todd Starnes, and I want to talk to you about a very serious issue facing our country, court packing. It's the tool of left-wing authoritarians. Hugo Chavez packed Venezuela's Supreme Court with his socialist cronies and paved the way for his tyrannical regime. But now Joe Biden and America's socialist radicals want to pack our Supreme Court with four new liberal justices. Court packing isn't some policy idea to improve the courts. It's a coup. A coup to take away your constitutional freedoms and turn America into a socialist country. That's why First Liberty Institute, the largest legal organization in the nation dedicated to defending religious liberty in America, is doing something about it. First Liberty recently launched SupremeCoup.com to serve as a one-stop shop in the fight against court packing and to help patriots like you learn the truth about what's happening in our courts. But more importantly, there's a big take action button that you can click to do your part to stop the Supreme Court coup. If you want to defend our God-given freedoms and stop the left's court-packing scheme, head over to supremecoup.com/Starnes.
I'm Mary Walters sitting in for Todd Starnes. So Joe Biden, he just had a parade of mistakes and bloopers. And just imagine if this were President Trump on the world stage, because remember, the whole world was going to hate us when it was President Trump. Right. The whole world's going to hate us. And I think they just didn't know what to expect, because Donald Trump was actually a leader who actually advocated for America instead of just saying, oh, sure, you need money here. We'll borrow money from the Chinese and our grandchildren will pay it off. Here, take it. That's what we're doing. That is what we're doing when we give money to all of these countries. We take it. Why they just can't go to China and borrow the money is beyond me. Why do we have to do it? But we do. And Donald Trump stopped that. And that was just one of the things Donald Trump stopped. But here is just a compilation of Joe Biden at the G7.
I'm sorry, I'm going to get in trouble with staff if I don't do this the right way. Jennifer Jacobs, Bloomberg.
How are your meetings going in Cornwall, Mr. President?
I beg your pardon?
How are your meetings going here in Cornwall?
Very well.
Come on.
This is gorgeous. I don't want to go home.
Joe, pay attention.
Our president Ramaphosa, President Moon, the Justin
Inn. And the President of South Africa.
And the President of South Africa, as I said earlier.
Oh, I
certainly did.
Yeah, that was just a small taste of Joe Biden at the G7 and some of his quote-unquote bloopers, if you will. One of the things he did is he confused Syria with Libya, not once, not twice, but three times. Imagine if President Trump had gotten his countries wrong. See, he doesn't know anything. He's not a politician. He's not fit for the job. He's not ready. He's not ready for prime time. Biden does it. Media is silent. He was speaking. Oh, you do have that. All right. I actually look at this. Kyle has it. Hit it, Kyle.
We could work together with Russia, for example, in Libya. We should be opening up the passes to be able to go through and provide food assistance and vital assistance to a population that's in real trouble. I think I'm going to try very much hard to it is. And by the way, there's places where I shouldn't be starting off and negotiating in public here. But let me say it this way. Russia has engaged in activities which we believe are contrary to international norms. But they have also bitten off some real problems they're going to have trouble chewing on. And for example, the rebuilding of Syria, of Libya, they're there. And as long as they're there without the ability to bring about some order in the region, and you can't do that very well without providing for the basic economic needs of people. So I'm hopeful that we can find an accommodation that where we can save the lives of people in Libya,
See, here's the thing. Joe Biden may be able to make it 4 years just because he's going to lull everyone around him into a deep slumber. It's the voice you use if you're reading like scripture or something along those lines, something soft and fuzzy and warm. You know, it's one of those tapes you play at night when you're trying to fall asleep. One of those things, meditation. That's what Joe Biden could do. So boring. But what you didn't notice, because you were so bored, is that he confused Syria with Libya three times. And Jake Sullivan, his national security advisor, had to actually come out and confirm that the president meant Syria, even though he said Libya not once, not twice, but three times. You heard him on what we played earlier, that mashup of him interrupting the British Prime Minister Boris Johnson in order to tell him that he didn't introduce the president of South Africa. And Boris Johnson said, no, I did introduce the president of South Africa. And Joe Biden had just no clue and just like giving a fist pump to the other guy. It's just a mess. All right, more with Joe Biden and the screw-ups and more of the G7 coming up here on the Todd Stern Show.
By now, you've all heard me talking about MyPillow and my good friend Mike Lindell. What an incredible product he has created for America. Those MyPillows never go flat. You can wash them, you can dry them as many times as you want, and they still maintain their shape. And you want to know why? Made in the good old U.S. of A. And now, for a limited time, Mike is offering his premium MyPillows for his lowest price ever. You can get a queen-size premium MyPillow for $29.98. The regular price, $69.98. That's a $40 savings. Kings are only $5 more. All MyPillow products come with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. So go right now to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener square, and use the promo code STARNS. You are going to get deep discounts on all MyPillow products, including the Giza Dream Bed Sheets, the MyPillow Mattress Topper, and the MyPillow Towel Set. Or you can call 800-839-8506 and use the promo code STARNS.
I'm Mary Walter, sitting in for Todd Starnes today here on the Todd Starnes Show. So, so excited to be with you. I'd like to give the number out, and if you would like to join me, I think sometimes you guys are pretty smart. I think people who listen to talk radio, pretty smart group of people, at least very informed. And sometimes I'll disagree with you, though, and then I don't think you're so smart. But I like to get your take on things as well. So 844-747-8868. Also, check out the live show blog at toddstarnes.com or go to Todd's Facebook page where you can watch live and you can leave a comment there as well. And I'll try to get to as many of them as I can throughout the show. Now, we were talking about Joe Biden and his encounters at the G7. And one of the things he did is he had a press conference yesterday. And he made reporters wait almost 3 hours for him yesterday before he appeared. 3 hours for his press conference in Brussels. The entire press conference lasted about 25 minutes. He comes in, he says, oh, thank you so very much. Sorry, you're all here so late. He answered questions from 5 reporters that were pre-selected by his staff. You know, what's interesting about this is privately, reporters will grumble about lack of access to this administration. Kamala Harris hasn't had a press conference in, what, months, right? I can't remember the last time Kamala Harris had a press conference. Joe Biden rarely takes questions from the press, and he will only take from certain reporters and only pre-vetted questions, so that they can give him the answers on a card or tell him ahead of time what they're going to ask him so he can at least know what he's supposed to say. They want no surprises with either one of them because she is no better. Sadly, I do, and I don't say this to be funny, but I do sadly think that Joe Biden has some dementia. I had a grandfather who had dementia. I see some of the same looks on his face that I saw on my grandfather. I see some of the same hesitancy, the same, you know, the same tells when he's lost I see on Joe Biden. I'm not a doctor. I don't, you know, so I have no idea if that's true. I just see some similarities. So I think that there's a problem there. So they're not going to let him answer unvetted questions. My gosh, that's not going to happen. But same thing with her. Have you noticed with Kamala Harris, when Lester Holt dared to press her on why she has not visited the border, her tell is when she does that. that really awkward laugh, the Hillary Clinton cackle. And I hate to use that because it's so derogatory to women, and it's something it's used only for women. So I really hate it, but it is a specific type of awkward laugh when they don't want to answer the question or don't know how to get out. That's it. Yes. Yes, that's it. Thank you. Yeah, the little children hear that laugh in their nightmares when they think the evil witch is coming. So he kept them waiting 3 hours for about five questions from five reporters, lasted about 25 minutes. They never explained why he was delayed. They didn't update the reporters on where he was or the timing for the press conference. They couldn't go anywhere. They had to just sit there waiting for him. They said he did appear fatigued when he had arrived. He said, but he had a really productive day of meetings with world leaders. Now, one of the pre-approved, pre-screened questions was from CNN's Jeff Zeleny. And Jeff Zeleny asked the president to react. He asked him, I'm going to tell you what the question is because you only hear the end of it in this clip that's coming up here. He says, in a weekend interview, Vladimir Putin laughed at the suggestion that you had called him a killer. Is that still your belief, sir, that he is a killer? And then he asked a second question and said, do you believe if he does agree to cooperate, then what kind of challenge do you find yourself in? How would you ever trust him, meaning Putin? And if Ronald Reagan said trust but verify, what do you say to Vladimir Putin? Here is Joe Biden's super uncomfortable response.
What do you say to Vladimir Putin?
To answer the first question, I'm laughing too. Well, look, I mean, he has made clear that the answer is, I believe he has in the past essentially acknowledged that he was, there are certain things that he would do or did do. But look, when I was asked that question on air, I answered it honestly. But it's not much of a, I don't think it matters a whole lot in terms of this next meeting we're about to have.
And then he went on to say, to answer the second question, I verified first and then trust. Because Reagan said trust but verify. He goes, no, I verify first and then trust. He does no verifying. His people do all of the quote unquote verifying. I want to know who's really running the show. Does anyone believe that Joe Biden is actually running the show? Because I don't think so. I don't think so. And I don't think he knows what's actually going on. I really don't. I think he just signs like those executive orders. He just signs them. They're like, yeah, Joe, Jill's there. Yeah, sign here, Joe. He signs. And I think maybe he asks questions and he gets answers, but whether they're the real thing, I truly don't think he knows. Somebody else is running. There's just some shadow government. And I hate to sound conspiratorial, but when it comes to Joe Biden and what's really happening, my tinfoil hat is out and polished. And sometimes I put it on and go, I don't think he has any idea what's happening here. Let's go to Mike in Gainesville, Georgia, listening on WDUN. Hey, Mike, you wanted to talk about the Hyde Amendment. Hi.
Yeah. Hi, I only have a little time, so I'll be real quick. For the new fiscal budget, I have read that Joe Biden does not want to include the Hyde Amendment, which denies federal funding for abortion. He wants to, and by taking the Hyde Amendment out, he will have the ability to use federal funding, taxpayer money, to fund abortions and abortion clinics. Now,
right.
That concerns me. I don't hear it reported very much on the news. Me being a pro-life, I adopted my first daughter rather than from somebody who was going to abort her. It puts me in a position as a taxpayer that I have to make a decision that I will not pay taxes if his budget goes through without the Hyde Amendment. So
Mike, thank
I
you.
I just want to say that. I just want to say that I've got to hang up now, but I thought I would put that out.
Well, thank you for joining us on the Todd Starn Show. Really appreciate it, Mike. Mike brings up a good point because it goes to what I was just saying, that I don't think Joe Biden knows what's in half the stuff that he signs. I just don't. And he's listening to this. a lot. And what did AOC say before the election? They like Joe Biden. We like Joe Biden. Why? Because we can push him. He's you know, he's changeable. That's why she liked him, because, you know, we can get him to, you know, give us a little bit of what we want. And she's right. Joe Biden's moved so far to the left. And I think because of that, you know, like with abortion, with the Hyde Amendment, Joe Biden keeps telling me what a great Catholic he is. I was just with a group of friends last night, all Catholic women, all from our church. And we were talking about Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi, and they get communion. And they're advocating for abortion. We just had this conversation last night. And we were talking about, wait a minute, how do they get communion? How are they not denied communication? Communion. Doesn't make any sense to us. And not only does the Hyde Amendment allow it to be spent in abortion clinics, taxpayer money, it allows it to be then fund abortions in other parts of the world. We can kill babies all over the world with your taxpayer dollars. Ain't America great? And what we're going to do, we're going to borrow the money from China. We'll borrow the money. China's going to buy our debt. So then we're going to wind up owing China. If China ever calls our debt, we're done. We are done. They can bankrupt this country in less than a day if they want to. They literally own us. But killing babies across the world is so important to us that we're going to put our grandchildren in that kind of debt and owing themselves to the Chinese for it? It makes no sense whatsoever. And then when you hear Joe Biden give that response that you just heard him give there, he paused for 7 full seconds because either A, he couldn't remember the 2 questions, which I get sometimes. Sometimes I go downstairs and I don't remember why I'm there. It happens. I totally get it. But if I know that I have a list of people to call on, the order in which to call them, and screenshots have been taken by the long lens cameras of what's on some of those papers, and the reporter's name is there, the outlet they're from, and the question they want to ask, all he had to do was look at the cheat sheet, look at the crib notes, and he would have had the 2 questions, and he could have answered them. And he couldn't do it. He's incapable. And I don't know about you, but this is really, really, really scary to me. It is. Liz Peek will be joining us later in the show. She's a columnist. We're going to talk to her about what's going on here with Joe Biden, with these, they call him gaffes, you know, crazy Uncle Joe. He's so cute. It's just a gaffe. You know, it's kind of what he's known for, his gaffe machine. And we write it off as being adorable. It's not adorable as the leader of the free world. It's scary as the leader of the free world. It really, truly is. All right. Coming up, I want to talk to you about January 6th and what happened on January 6th and the answers we don't have. Ashley Babbitt, the only person killed on January 6th. Other people died, but they were not. Again, Brian Sicknick's death certificate, official cause of death is natural causes. They're trying to tie January 6th into it, but it was natural causes. He had a brain aneurysm. You don't know if you have a brain aneurysm until it goes. And then you know you have a brain aneurysm. 2 overdoses and 2 heart attacks. So Ashley Babbitt, the only person killed on January 6th. But who pulled the trigger? It's a great question. And Tucker Carlson asked that question last night of Ashley Babbitt's husband and his lawyer. And we have that for you coming up next right here on the Todd Starnes Show.
Triggering microaggressions from coast to coast. It's Todd Starnes.
So I was trying to find a part for my Cadillac the other day, but instead of going down to the auto store, I went online to rockauto.com and I saved a ton of money. You know, chain stores have different price tiers for the professional mechanics and the do-it-yourselfers, but rockauto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. RockAuto.com offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear, just like the airlines do. RockAuto.com is for everybody, and it does not require membership or an account to log in. The best part about it, RockAuto.com is a family business. They've been serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. So go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. And best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. And here's what I also want you to do. Write Starnes, S-T-A-R-N-E-S, in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that I sent you to rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Todd Starnes Show. I am Mary Welter sitting in for Todd Starnes today. 844-747-8861 is the number, or you can go to Todd's Facebook page and you can leave your comments there if you would like to do that. Love to have you. Love to hear from you. We're going to switch up a little bit. We're going to talk about Ashley Babbitt and what we don't know. And why we don't know it coming up later in the show, because I want to give more time to really go into it. I want to talk a little bit about cancel culture, because you're starting to see the left lose control of the narrative. You know, the left really controlled culture. They're very smart. They started it in our schools, and they infiltrated the schools with very liberal teachers and a very liberal curriculum. And if you have kids in school, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And can I, on a little tangent, I have this theory, and you can disagree with me and that's fine, but I think that COVID has been a gift in this way, our children's education. We now, on the downside, kids lost an entire year of education. They're so far behind. My niece graduating from college had no graduation. It was really sad. She had no senior year. She lost so much of her college experience, and it was really, really sad. And I feel for her, and she can never get that back. She had a virtual graduation, and now they've invited them back to graduate with the class of 2022. She's like, why do I want to go back 2 years later and graduate with the class of 2022? It's dumb. She's not going to do it, obviously. They're all going to have jobs. But here's the thing. Parents were forced to get involved in their children's education. And up until this point, if you were a public school parent, there was no pressure on you to get involved. Whereas if you go to like a Catholic school or a private school, most of those schools, at least the Catholic institutions, have requirements from the parents that you have to give X number of volunteer hours with the school. So you get involved with either being a chaperone on a school trip, or you wind up having to like run the fair, or you have to do fundraising. There's all sorts of things that keep you involved with the school. And that's a really good thing, because you get involved with your children's teachers. You get to know them. You get to know the players. You get to talk to other parents. And so you're more involved in your children's education. You're much more likely to have conversations about what's going on in the school. If you go to a public school, though, you don't have those conversations. So I think COVID, parents suddenly became aware of what their kids are learning in school, because the kids were sitting at the kitchen table while maybe mom or was at the kitchen counter doing her work, and dad was in the dining room doing his work. And they suddenly started to see what was going on, what the teachers were saying in these classrooms, and what was happening. So it woke up. So now cancel culture, I think there's a backlash against this now. And I point to two people, Kevin Hart and Charles Barkley. Here's Charles Barkley on cancel culture. He was on the Grant and Danny show. I don't know what I guess they talk sports. And he was talking about how things have changed. And he was railing about cancel culture.
If you crack a joke the wrong way, they're like, oh, no, 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 no. You crossed the line. I mean, they won't even let me talk about San Antonio anymore. You know, what I'm always talking about, them big old women down in San Antonio, they're like, Charles, we got one lady wrote an article. Yeah. I'm like, first of all, I didn't call anybody personally fat in San Antonio. I was just joking around. And well, this one lady wrote this article. I'm like, so y'all gonna let one lady? We've been having fun with this for probably 10, 15 years. and when we go to San Antonio, The people are having a blast with it. I mean, the people in San Antonio, they had T-shirts made up. Now, I mean, I don't have to go back there anymore because their team sucks. My life is dick. You can't even have fun nowadays without these trying to get you canceled and things like that. So I, especially you being a comedian,
yeah.
But still just having fun talking about sports. Like, listen, I'm trying to hang on for another couple of years till I'm 60, and then they can kiss my ass. Cause I'm only working to 60. I've already told them that. I said, yo, man, I'm not working till the day I die. That's just stupid. And if I don't have enough money by now, I'm an idiot anyway. So they should fire me anyway. But like, that's all we ever talk about behind the scenes now. Like, yo, man, be careful going in this direction. I'm like, yo, man, we can't even have fun anymore. We've had fun all these years, and now all of a sudden in the last year and a half, everybody's trying to get everybody fired, and it really sucks. So I can't imagine.
So Charles Barkley, he's railing against what so many of us know. Liberals are miserable. They suck the fun out of everything. You're not allowed to laugh at anything. You can't even laugh at yourself. The only person who is allowed to say something unfiltered and be forgiven for is Joe Biden or a Democrat politician. Ilhan Omar is allowed to, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer. They're all allowed to say things and then repent and it's okay. No one else is allowed to, especially if you're a conservative. They will go back to something you said in high school and they will ruin your life because of something you allegedly said back in high school. But if you're Governor Ralph Northam, your medical school yearbook can have a picture of you either in blackface or under a KKK hood. He's still not sure which one he is. And that's okay. You get a free pass on that one, you know, because he didn't mean it and he apologized. So it's okay. So it's because of the double standard that people are noticing and have had enough of this. And I think they're starting to lose the culture war. And that's a good thing. Even Kevin Hart in the Sunday Times, in Britain's Sunday Times, says he doesn't care about cancel culture. They've come after him a couple times. And he has managed to survive. So good for him. I think Kevin Hart's really funny. Coming up, Steve Moore will be joining us. We're going to talk economics. And we're going to talk about inflation. Some people raising the alarm bell that inflation is just around the corner. That's next on the Todd Starn Show.
Broadcasting coast to coast and border to border from Memphis, Tennessee. It's common sense conservative commentary from Todd Starnes.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
I'm Mary Walter, sitting in for Todd Starnes today on the Todd Starnes Show. You can join us at the live show blog at toddstarnes.com. You can comment there. You can also give us a call at 844-744-8868. Coming up, we're being joined by Steve Moore first. But Steve and I, we're going to talk about inflation. So after we speak with Steve, I wanted to ask you if you're seeing the cost of things go up. I've seen it on restaurant menus. I've seen the cost of various things that are more expensive now, just like a buck here or there. But it's still a buck here or there. And so I've definitely noticed it. To me, inflation is here. I'm seeing it. So I want to know if you're seeing it as well. 844-747-8868. I just had a Joe Biden moment. 844-747-8868 or the live show blog at toddstarnes.com. Steve Moore, the author of Trumponomics, The Freedom Works, a senior economic contributor and chief economist at the Heritage Foundation, and a good friend. Hey, Steve, thank you for joining me.
Hi, Mary. When you ask, do I see inflation, I feel like, is that a trick question? Everybody around the country is just from coast to coast, from Maine to California. People are seeing the effects of these rampant price rises, and they're causing real hardship, by the way, for people at the bottom and seniors who are working on, you know, or living on fixed incomes. It's a tax, by the way. I mean, Biden keeps saying, I'm not going to raise tax on anybody who makes less than $400,000. I mean, anybody who buy, every time I go to the gas tank, people are grumbling, and I say, "Yep, this is the Biden tax."
So, a couple of things there. First of all, you said, you know, seniors are living on fixed incomes. We're all living on fixed incomes. Why do seniors get to pull that card? Well, if my taxes go up, my employer doesn't pay me more. You know, so
well,
we're all on fixed incomes.
That's a great point. You know, and what happens is that, you know, even for people who do get wage increases to account for inflation, the wage increases come after the inflation, right? So you're always running behind. I remember a very famous story in the late 1970s when the United Auto Workers had a very famous deal with the automakers, and they got about a 20% wage increase over 3 years. And then they found out, oh, wait a minute, inflation over those 3 years went up by 25%. So they actually lost money. And so, these unexpected increases. And I'm actually furious with the Fed and with the people of the Biden administration who keep, wagging our fingers at us, saying, oh, don't worry, it's just temporary. It's going to go away. It's like, well, come on. It's accelerating right now. We got new job numbers that came out this morning. Mary, I was on Fox Business News when those numbers came out, and we were all, our jaws just dropped because the numbers were much worse than anybody thought they would be. Just like last, those were for the producer price producer prices. Last week we got the consumer price numbers; those were bad. But when producer prices go up, guess what happens to consumer prices? I mean, they go up too.
So now producer prices, because I'm not an economist, but I think I'm a little bit better than AOC. Producer prices mean that for the people who are producing the goods, their cost for, I guess, raw materials has gone up.
Exactly.
So now it costs more to produce whatever the product happens to be.
Well, yeah, well said. So, I mean, a simple example would be, a restaurant. If the restaurant has to pay more for the fish and the meat and the produce, they're going to have to increase their prices, right? To the consumer for, going out for a meal, or the grocery store has to do that. Or if the price of producing, oil and gas in this country goes up, gee, why would that happen when Biden isn't creating the pipeline? Then, of course, the price you pay at the gas station goes up. By the way, yesterday I paid $3.49 a gallon for a fill up for 15 gallons of gas. And that's up about $1.10 from when Biden was the day Biden was elected. That's like, so I paid $15.50 more for a fill up.
Wow. So let me ask you, why is this happening? Because I've noticed, my husband and I noticed, I said in the beginning, the introduction here, we went out to a restaurant and we thought, wow, these prices, the same restaurant we've been to before. And yeah, we noticed the prices were more. I'm like, why is this $15 now instead of $12? Like $3 or $2 for an entree or an appetizer or whatever is more expensive. And we thought, okay, well, maybe they're trying to recoup the money from COVID. I get it. I'm trying to do my part. Okay. We're just going to get one less drink, whatever. But that's what I thought it was from. Why is the price of everything going up? What's causing that? Is it COVID?
Well, Mary, you and your husband are going to have to come back to Northern Virginia and have dinner with Ann and I at that Mexican restaurant, which has pretty low prices.
It does. It's great. And it's a very good restaurant. Shout out, too.
There you go. But you're right. I mean, it's you can tell I'm frustrated because it's like, when I hear the Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell say, "We think these are transitory price increases," and a month ago we don't see any inflation out there, I'm like, why don't you go to get out of your bubble there in Washington and go to a store, or go to a grocery store, or go to a restaurant and buy an airline ticket? I was in Orlando this weekend for a conference, and I get in, and there were not only were the rental car prices through the roof, there were no rental cars.
Yes.
Zero. The prices are going up. We're running out of things. I mean, this is converting from an annoyance to a crisis.
But again, my question, because we've had, all right, so, we live in a really old house. And so we find that we've been doing the house slowly because we don't have money. And so we're on the last side of the house where we're taking down the aluminum that's on the 140-year-old wood trim. They just covered it with aluminum. And we're replacing all that wood slowly but surely, like around the windows and on the trim of the house, the peak,
yep,
and everything,
yep,
with AZAC. We're having the AZAC milled to mimic what it was. And we're putting AZAC up because you don't have to paint it and last forever. The scaffolding has been on the side of my house since November because they took all the aluminum siding down. They can't get the AZAC. Why?
Well,
why can't you get it? I don't understand what's happened in a year that I can't get it.
So it's funny when you say that, because our family is going through exactly the same thing, where we've had this construction project going on for almost 10 months and it was supposed to be done in 3 or 4 months, and I'm just furious about it. And so I keep asking the contractor, what the heck is going on? Well, he's got multiple problems. One is he can't get the workers to stay on the job.
Yes.
Right.
Okay.
Because the government's paying all these unemployment benefits, which is, you know, people should look at today's Wall Street Journal as a piece about from our Committee on Unleashed Prosperity about, you know, people making 60, 70, 80, 90, even $100,000 in all these government benefits now for not working. So that's a problem. I mean, how is a contractor going to compete with that to get people back on the job? Then you got the problem of, like, have you looked at what's happened with lumber prices? They've tripled in just the last 6 months. I mean,
but why?
Anything like that.
Why?
I mean, supply problems. You know, we've got, if you can't get workers on the job, you can't produce things.
Okay.
You're seeing, and the other thing that's going on here is the massive multi-trillions of dollars of government spending and borrowing. I mean, you and I have been talking about this for a year now. These massive government spending bills paid for with debt are cheapening the dollar, and then they're making everything more expensive. So the stupidest thing to do right now, if you're concerned about inflation right now, imagine we were to spend another $2 trillion on another spending bill that then you're going to see, you know, totally runaway inflation, just pouring all this money into the economy without the goods and services. I mean, inflation is too many dollars chasing too few goods. You know, people can remember that from Economics 100, right? Too many dollars chasing too few goods. That's exactly what we have in America today, right now, Mary.
Okay, so the Biden administration is telling us that this is going to be short term, and we're raising everyone's wages. We're going to raise minimum wage so that people can afford all this stuff. That doesn't work, right?
Well, first of all, I mean, look, I hope they're right. I hope it is temporary. I don't like to pay $56 to fill up my tank, and nobody does. And so, you know, I'm hoping and praying they're right, but I'm not so sure they are, especially after the numbers came out this morning. It's like, remember when a month or two ago, when all of a sudden we saw all these unfilled jobs in America, the Biden administration, oh, this is just temporary, right? I mean, it's don't worry about this and blah, blah, blah. Oh, people are just worried about COVID. And then, you know, last month we got this really bad number and they said, whoops, you know, they couldn't use those excuses anymore. And now it's the same thing. I'll be curious to what the Biden, economic geniuses say now that we've seen another bad number on inflation. They're just mounting up. And now we're looking at potentially, you know, 7%, 7 or 8% inflation this year. That's a lot. That's the most we've had since the late 1970s. That's 40 years high in inflation. And people who haven't experienced this before, I'm a little older than you are, Mary, because you were I don't think you were born in the 1970s, but I remember every time we go to the store, you know, they'd have a higher sticker price on things, you know, my job, by the way, when I was 18 years old, was working at a corner grocery store. Literally, they had all those old machines, you know, before they had the barcodes on things, they'd have the sticker prices. I'd go in and my boss would say, hey, you got to go through the aisles and put higher prices on the cans of vegetables and the Wheaties. And I'd be there with that machine going down the aisles. People would try to pick the stuff off the aisles before I could put a higher price on them. You know, that's how crazy inflation was.
I don't want to run out of time here with you, but so here's my question. I have a lot of them. If someone is planning, because I have friends who have been looking for a house for a while, but prices keep going up. They're renting a house. They've got two kids, small children. They're like, okay, we want to get out of renting. We want to buy a house. We finally saved up enough money, paid off their student loans, everything. They're millennials. But now they're saying, am I going to be paying such an inflated price? Do I just wait until it all comes crashing down and inflation goes crazy and nobody's buying houses and there's a glut of houses on the market and just do that? Is that the position at this point when you look in your crystal ball down the road? Do you just say, you know what, at this point, you might as well just wait and for inflation to hit and get something cheap?
Okay. So, Mary, do you have a pencil handy there?
I do.
Okay. So you have a little pad of paper, okay? I want all your listeners to get a pad of paper and a little pencil. I'm gonna slip you the answer, okay? You ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
All right, ready?
Mm-hmm.
Buy low, sell high. Buy low, sell high. And so I say that only half jokingly. Look, prices are high right now for housing. Prices are high for stocks right now. I'm not, you know, and I know some of my friends are super bullish on the stock market. You know, I would be very skittish about, you know, buying at today's prices on stocks and buying at today's prices on housing, because, you know, there will be a correction. there will be a correction, Mary. There's just no doubt in my mind. What I can't tell you is when that correction is. And if you try to find the top, you know, if you try to, you know, get right. in before you hit the top, you know, you're taking a very risk. Because I think we could easily see a 20 to 25%, maybe even 30%, you know, correction in the prices in real estate and housing and stocks. I just don't know when it's going to happen. Because, look, we have a president who's been in office for 6 months, and I can't think of a single thing he's done right on the economy. Can you? I mean, am I missing something?
Well, no, because you and I are part of the production class. They call it, alone, they call it the working class. They refer to blue collar workers. Like, what about everybody else who works 13-hour days, but they just don't work in a mine for 13-hour days, right? So a listener told me it should be called the production class. We're producers. And whether you wear a white collar or a blue collar, you're a producer. And the production class looks at this and says, well, wait a minute. Everything's going up like we were just talking about, and we see this happening. If you're sitting back and you're collecting money from the federal government, either in extended unemployment, now you've been out of the market, the workplace, for over a year, the odds of you moving back into the market, I would assume, is going to be tougher. And those, they have to be noticed prices going up. But if you're part of the group that lives off the federal government through disability or whatever it happens to be, you don't care, because the government never runs out of other people's money.
Yeah, well, we'll see about that. I mean, we're doing an experiment in that right now. But you raised an important point here, which is, you know, the left says, you know, the Biden people say what we're doing is redistributing income from the wealthy, you know, to the lower income people. But actually, that's not what's really happening. What's going on right now is we are redistributing income from people who are working and being productive to people who are not working and not productive. And that's right. not a very good economic strategy, right? I mean, that's not going to allow us to compete with Japan and Germany and China and these other countries. I mean, I am worried about the bankrupting of our country with respect to the massive spending and borrowing that's going on, which is, you know, dizzyingly high in terms of, I never thought I'd see the day where we'd have a president propose a $6 trillion budget with a decade of $22 trillion in debt. I mean, these are insane numbers. And we have these crazy people, academics, who came up with this idea. I don't want to get too much in the weeds, but about a year or two ago, these academics at these second-rate universities came up with this idea of modern monetary theory. Have you ever heard of that one, Mary?
No. Is it something AOC studied?
Modern monetary theory.
Well, Steve, you know what? Hold on. Hold that thought. Hold that thought, because I want to find out what it is, and I don't want to have to cut you short. So hold that thought, and we're back with more with Stephen Moore explaining the economics to us of this big mess that we're all in. All right, more with him coming up on the Todd Starnes Show.
You're listening to Todd Starnes.
For Todd Starnes here with Stephen Moore, the author of Trumponomics. Steve, before we go into what you were going to explain there, and I forgot what the name of it was now because I didn't write it down because I didn't. Ricky says that fixed income means they don't get enough to live on and can't work. I always thought fixed income was something that, you know, like, well, I'm not working anymore and I'm living on only what I have saved, which is a fixed income, which that's what I always thought fixed income means. Am I wrong?
Well, I don't know if there's any official definition of what fixed income means, but what I meant by that is what people, you know, when people have an income, they're just living off of their paycheck and they don't have, you know, or their life savings, you know, for example, a senior citizen who's getting Social Security and just money from their past investments. That's a fixed income. Now, it is true that the Social Security benefits and so on are adjusted for inflation, but they run behind the, you know, behind the times. And so there's a lag between the time that seniors have the money to pay for these higher, you know, prices and the time mm-hmm. they get an increase in their benefit, because those benefits are only adjusted once a year. So people are, you know, seniors, you know, with maybe $30,000 of income, they don't see those higher checks until a year later.
Yeah. Okay. And I'm glad you brought that up because Dory said, we're attacking people that I've worked hard all their lives for their Social Security retirement fund, yep. people who paid into it. Now, I don't remember even talking about the Social Security retirement fund in our previous segment, but Dory thinks we are. So I don't. Did we talk about Social Security retirement?
Well,
I don't think we did.
I don't think we did. I lost you there for a minute. Look, it's for people. There are many people who really depend on those Social Security checks and to pay the system, and they get what's called the COLA, a cost of living right. adjustment. And my point was that that cost of living adjustment doesn't happen until a year after the inflation happened.
Right.
that caused real hardship.
Yeah, they probably took umbrage with me saying that people who work. Who are still working also have a fixed income as well, because if my taxes go up or if it costs me $15 to, fill my tank and I still have to drive to work and drive back again, I'm not getting a cost of living increase. I'm not getting a COLA. I'm not getting more from my employer either. So they probably took umbrage at me saying that they weren't the only ones living on a fixed income. So I think that's where that comes from. All right. Explain what you were just talking about. So you didn't want to get into the weeds. So go ahead.
Well, I don't want to get too much into the weeds, but this is a new theory that came out, as I was mentioning earlier.
Oh, you know what, Todd? Steve, hang on. We're running out of time. Sorry.
Madam Speaker, I rise today to call for immediate consideration of my See the Crisis Act. This legislation would prevent Vice President Kamala Harris from using taxpayer dollars to travel internationally before seeing the southern border crisis firsthand.
That woman right there, Congresswoman Ashley Hinson, introducing her See the Crisis Act in order to get the Vice President to actually do her job. She joins us now, Congresswoman Ashley Hinson. Thank you so much for joining us.
Mary, thank you so much for having me.
So it took someone actually sitting down and writing a bill to try to get the Vice President to do her job. This to me just seems to be ridiculous. I can't think of a word to describe the lunacy of all of this. Why did it come to this?
Well, I think it came to the simple fact, Mary, that we have to start holding them accountable for their failures and for this crisis at the border. The Biden administration's policies have created the largest surge of illegal immigration in a decade. I mean, you look at what happened in May, the numbers are staggering. There were over 180,000 migrants apprehended at the border, the biggest illegal immigration surge in decades. And it's not just people, it's drugs, it's the cartels winning, the traffickers are winning. And so I had the chance to go visit the border. I had a chance to talk to those Customs and Border Patrol agents myself, and I know that's exactly what the Vice President needs to do. So this bill basically says if she doesn't go to the border and doesn't actually come up with a plan to fix the situation at the border, then she can't use Air Force 2 for international travel. She needs to go there first. It should be a priority. And I think we've seen very clearly that the Democrats in Congress are now on the record as saying they don't see it as a priority.
Every time I hear us discuss, her absence, where in the world is Kamala Harris? And it's almost like a game. And she refuses to even, talk about it, hasn't held a press conference, laughed at Lester Holt when he asked why she hasn't been there. She doesn't see a need to go there. I personally, and you can disagree with me, but I personally think that this is being done on purpose. This is purposeful on the administration's part. That, she says, well, I'm not in charge of the problem at the border. I'm going to go find the root cause of the problem. So I'm going to go over here and I'm going to go look for something over here, which we all know the answer as to why there's a surge at the border. We have free health care, free education, free housing. They're going to make us all citizens. America's paved with gold. They'll take money from rich white Americans and they're going to give it to me. There's a zillion reasons, and we could lay them out, you and I, in 5 minutes here. So that's not what's really happening. This is being done purposely by the administration and by the Democrats at large. This is the push by the progressive ring, wing, to redistribute wealth in the world. You know, equity, let's raise all the boats by bringing America down. That's what they're trying to do here. One world order. You know, we have a world without borders, this kumbaya thing that the left has going on, and Joe Biden being malleable enough for them to push to get this through. Am I wrong?
Well, I think the biggest challenge here, Mary, is there are so many issues that they are turning a blind eye to here, not only at the border, but within these departments that are tasked with dealing with this border situation. Obviously, I mentioned the Customs and Border Patrol agents and the challenges that they're facing and this administration refuses to acknowledge, not to mention ICE and what's happening with Immigration and Customs Enforcement. They actually had an internal memo, and I asked the acting director about this, but to change the way they are enforcing immigration laws in this country, not to mention the fact that they confirmed to me that they have no verifiable way to actually track people once they come into this country illegally. So especially for states like Iowa, when I say Iowa is a border state, every state is a border state right now. It's true because this administration, yes, again, has turned a blind eye to this crisis at the border, and it's creating many more crises along the way. It's a human trafficking nightmare. You know, they're capitalizing, these cartels are capitalizing on the struggles of people. And that's just not right. And I think that the fact that this administration hasn't recognized that or chooses not to in this case, it's abhorrent.
So let me ask you this question, because I'm not a lawyer. I don't know constitutional law, but I thought that the president raised his right hand and vowed to uphold the laws of the country. We have immigration laws, yet he is rewriting them, which he has no power to do. Congress makes the laws. How does he have the right, the ability to just rewrite constitutional law, which is what he's doing?
Yeah. Well, and I had a chance to question Secretary Mayorkas about this specifically, because he claimed that they are enforcing the laws, our immigration laws at the border. We are not. I mean, if you ask the actual Customs and Border Patrol agents on the ground, they know that they're not enforcing the border, in essence, with catch and release. So we need to get back to policies that are working, and that's the safety and security of our border is paramount. So we need to get back to construction on that wall, which, of course, stopped the day that President Biden took office. Vice President Harris was named the border czar 83 days ago. That's 83 days that this problem has continued to magnify. And you know who that affects? That affects families in Iowa who are going to be impacted by an overdose because of the dangerous fentanyl coming in. Yep. It affects our law enforcement officers locally who are having to combat these problems, not only with drugs, but with illegal immigrants in our communities. That doesn't mean I don't think we should fix our broken immigration system, because I do. And I think Republicans stand ready to work to fix this problem. But the key solution here is coming up with a plan to actually stem the tide of this illegal immigration at our southern border. And the best way to do that is to stop catch and release and return to the era of policies where we were actually prioritizing our border. Department of Homeland Security is pretty much the only department in the entire president's budget that did not get any sort of an increase in funding.
So two questions. First one, what's the end game here? What's the end game of the Democrats?
I think you're right. I think they want to see open borders. I mean, that's what we're hearing from the progressive left. And, you know, this is a safety and security issue for our entire country. And everybody needs to be on alert about this, because that, I believe, is their end goal with what they're trying to do here. So, again, our end goal is to try to hold Vice President Harris accountable for her failure to actually act and come up with a solution. Because I can tell you, when I'm talking to moms in minivans in Iowa, like myself, they're angry, they're upset, and they see this as a failure of the administration.
Yeah, as well they should be, because it truly is. What has happened? The Democrats blocked this, though, right? They blocked this See the Crisis Act, right?
They did. Yes, we brought it up on the House floor last night. So I heard you playing some of my remarks from last night. And, you know, when I think about this, this is not a laughing matter. I was so offended to see Vice President Harris be so flippant with her response to Lester Holt a few weeks ago when asked about her plans to visit the border. She says she has plans, but it's very clear to me that the administration's plan is to ignore this. And so, again, we need her to go see the crisis. This administration clearly has a crisis on its hands that was created by their policies, and it's time to hold them accountable.
One more quick question for you. Since I have you, I want to pick your brain. Axios and Slate both reporting that there are rumbles among the establishment media that Joe Biden is setting up Kamala Harris to fail. She's been charged with immigration and voting rights. Neither one of those issues and the changes they want to make are popular with the American public, and that crosses all party lines. And especially they're going to lose the Hispanic vote when they begin on immigration alone. So both of those issues, not their position, not popular. Is he setting her up to fail? Is that what's happening here?
I don't think he has to set her up. I think he's doing it on her own here by not leading on this issue. And there are Democrats in Congress who have districts along the border who are speaking up about this issue.
Yes.
They want solutions. And at the border, I had a chance when I visited back at the end of April to meet with Democrat sheriffs, Republican sheriffs, mayors of both parties. And again, this is not a partisan issue. This is about keeping our communities safe. It's about protecting what this country was built on, which was freedom and opportunity. And we need to have that not only for Americans, but for those who want to come here the right way.
Well, if the Republican Party is smart, they will take a page out of the Democrat playbook, especially when it comes to the midterms. And they're going to hammer these two issues home, immigration and voting rights, because they're winning issues for the Republicans. And they've got the Democrats on record, and they just play the video over and over and over again and play that audio over and over. And the pictures of these people streaming across the border and the people who live on the border. And like you said, in Iowa, in states all over the country who are feeling the effects of what is happening. Now, these people are being dumped off in the middle of the night in some of these communities in the middle of the country.
Right.
And now the taxpayers have to figure out what to do with them.
Yep. And
it's crazy.
Happened in Iowa as well. And you know what?
Yeah.
One point I would make, too, it was interesting. After I got done speaking on the floor last night, Congressman McGovern was, you know, rebutting my remarks. And he said, oh, well, we don't need her to go there for a photo op. Well, I can tell you what the photo ops are. Go follow our Customs and Border Patrol pages from these regions. Eagle Pass has a great one. And they are posting pictures every single day of the immigrants, the illegal immigrants coming across the border, the stash houses, the drugs, the crime that is happening. Again, cartels are winning. They are doing gangbuster business under this administration. This isn't about a photo op. This is about finding solutions for the safety and security and the freedom of our country.
Amen. And to your point, another winning issue for the Republicans. You had mentioned, as you were saying, you said that, you know, the cartels, these people are beholden to the cartels. That story's not being told. This is slavery. They're bringing people into this country who are literally the slaves of the cartels because their freedom, they have to pay off their freedom. And then the interest builds up and they never pay their freedom off. And they are, all their money goes to the cartels. So the Democrats are actually advocating for slavery in this country. And no one's telling that story. So good for you. Thank you so much, Congresswoman, for your time. I know you're a very busy woman, and we really do appreciate the time you've given us this morning. And I love to see Republicans hammering it and, you know, really controlling the message, and which you are doing that. So thank you for that.
No, thank you for having me again. We like to say the Biden administration may be turning a blind eye, but we definitely see the crisis firsthand.
Absolutely. Representative Ashley Hinson, thank you for joining us on the Todd Starnes Show. Your calls coming up, 844-747-8868, if you want to comment on what you just heard here. And let me ask you, do you think that that Kamala Harris is going to fail here? This is going to be hung around her neck. The voting rights and the immigration issue is going to be hung around her neck. And the way she's laughing very flippantly, you know, to Lester Holt, oh, well, I haven't been to France either. That if Joe Biden makes it for 4 years, or if she somehow becomes president in the, you know, in the last 2 years of Biden's presidency, I think she's got a lot of problems on her hand in 24. And Democrats are secretly worried about that. You're hearing more and more. You've got Axios and Slate talking about it. Do the Democrats have a problem on their hand when it comes to the midterms and the next presidential election? You can also go to the live show blog at toddstarnes.com, or go to Todd Starnes' Facebook page and comment there. And I'll get to your comments as soon as I can. It's coming up on the Todd Starnes Show.
It's the Todd Starnes Radio Show.
I'm Mary Walter sitting in for Todd Starnes here on the Todd Starnes Show. We were just talking to Congresswoman Ashley Hinson, and she sponsored a bill that would force the vice president to actually go to the border and talk to the men and women doing the job on the border to try to enforce the laws on the border that they keep telling us are being enforced, but they're really not being enforced. This is what I see. This is what they do on the left. They control the message beautifully, and I say that all the time. The left controls the message. Republicans just respond to it. They don't know how to control it. Although you see some members of Congress starting to do that, like Congresswoman Ashley Hinson, who said, okay, well, I'm going to come forward with this bill. That's something that the left would do to force the Republicans' hands. She forced the Democrats to go on record to vote against that. That the vice president would actually have to go to the border and do her job as opposed to flying anywhere else in the world. Right? So I like to see when we have people in Congress on the right who actually try to do to the Democrats what they do to us so often. Speaking of the vice president, so I'm asking you if you think that her chances of ever being president are slipping away. Now, remember, Kamala Harris during the debate, she is the one who told me that the current president is a racist. Remember, she painted him as a racist quite well. She did a very good job of it. And after that debate, I thought, Biden's out, because he didn't know how to respond to it. His team, for whatever reason, didn't see that coming. I don't know how they didn't see that coming, because he has a pretty racist past. He's made some remarkably racist comments, even during the election. If you don't vote for me, you ain't black. Can you even begin to imagine if a Republican said that? Their career would be over. You'd be saying Trump who? It would be over. Joe Biden says it. Free pass. It's okay. He didn't mean it. Oh, Uncle Joe, crazy Joe. It's all right. But couple that with what Kamala Harris told us during the debates. Uncle Joe's a racist is what it looks like. That's what it sounds like. So Kamala Harris, though, remember, she was out before the Iowa caucuses. She's unlikable, people. She's unlikable. She's not a good debater. She's not a good interviewer. They're going to hide, hiding Biden. They hid him throughout the campaign, and it worked. Hiding him worked. And they're hiding him now as much as they possibly can. He's having a meeting with Putin. And unlike President Trump, Trump and Putin came out afterwards. They sat in front of the press, and they both answered questions. Biden's incapable of doing that. His handlers, or whoever's running the government, doesn't want him seen next to Putin, who's young and, you know, loves to be a real macho man and loves to bang the chest. And, you know, we see the pictures of him, you know, bare chested. There's actually a calendar of Vladimir Putin, you know, doing manly things, you know, in the ice, you know, taking an ice bath and things like that, you know, doing all these manly things. Joe Biden, you could do a calendar of him eating an ice cream cone awkwardly or sniffing a young girl's hair awkwardly. There's nothing that you could even compare it to. So he doesn't want to be seen that way, and he can't answer the questions. So we have a president and a vice president who are incapable of speaking to the press, whose handlers are trying to keep them as hidden as possible. And you've got Axios saying that Harris's stumbles during her first foreign trip have rekindled the debate from her presidential campaign about whether she, and not her staff, is to blame. She's in a tough spot managing two issues, immigration and voting rights, the latter of which she's reported to have chosen herself, that have little upside and huge downside. Slate warned that Biden may be setting her up to fail by putting her in charge of the border crisis and election takeover legislation, which are becoming losing issues for the administration. They don't poll well. The American people don't want the federal government taking over their elections. And rightfully so. That's not the way it's set up. The states are in charge of the elections in their states, and that's how they run them. And especially in the more conservative states, they don't want that done. And I guarantee you that if this were a President Trump administration that wanted to take over the elections, the Democrats would be screaming bloody murder right now. He's a dictator. He's going to steal the election. That's why he wants to do this. And they never think that the shoe's ever going to be on the other foot, which is one of the reasons I think they want to nationalize the election. But they're going to put Harris in charge of this as well. Slate goes on to say, if you look at the assignments Kamala Harris has been given during her tenure as vice president, it's pretty easy to think that she's getting the short end of the political stick. First, she was tasked with taking on immigration. After mostly staying in D.C. during the pandemic, Harris is on her first international trip, a visit aimed at helping Guatemala and Mexico stem migration. She's also been assigned to help protect voting rights that are under attack across the country. It's hard to know what to call her job, why she's being saddled with the tasks she's been saddled with, and what this may portend for her future political prospects. Lowest approval rating in her 100 years, lower than former Vice President Mike Pence. So things are not going swimmingly for her. Coming up next, columnist Liz Peek joining us. We're going to talk to her about this. We're going to talk about Joe Biden's performance at the G7 as well. That's coming up next on the Todd Starnes Show.
Broadcasting coast to coast and border to border from Memphis, Tennessee. It's America's favorite gun-toting, Bible-clinging deplorable.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah.
And welcome. I'm Mary Walter, sitting in for Todd Starnes today. You can join me at 844-747-8888. 6-8, and if you're just joining us, I'd love to hear from you, love to hear what you're thinking, love to hear your interpretation of things. You can also go to the live show blog at toddstarnes.com or go to Facebook to Todd's page there, and you can comment on the Facebook Live thread that is going on there as well, and you can listen there too. Joining us now, Liz Peek, columnist. Thank you so much for joining us, Liz.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, of course, there's so much that I wanted to get into with you that I've said, we're going to talk about that with Liz later. So let's get it. You know, look, let's start off with this. Can we play cut four here? Kyle, can we play cut four and listen to this? This is Joe Biden's greatest hits from his G7 trip.
Great.
I'm sorry, I'm going to get in trouble with staff if I don't do this the right way. Jennifer Jacob Bloomberg.
How are your meetings going in Cornwall, Mr. President?
I beg your pardon?
How are your meetings going here in Cornwall?
Very well.
Come on.
This is gorgeous. I don't want to go home.
Joe, pay attention.
Our president has a pleasure, Moon, the just committee. And the president of South Africa. And the president of South Africa, As I said earlier, I certainly did.
We could work together with Russia, for example, in Libya. We should be opening up the passes to be able to go through and provide food assistance and vital assistance to a population that's in real trouble. I think I'm going to try very much hard to. It is, and by the way, there's places where I shouldn't be starting off and negotiating in public here, but let me say it this way. Russia has engaged in activities which are, we believe, are contrary to international norms, but they have also bitten off some real problems they're going to have trouble chewing on. And, for example, the rebuilding of Syria, of Libya, of, you know, this is, they're there. And as long as they're there without the ability to bring about some order in the region, and you can't do that very well without providing for the basic economic needs of people. So I'm hopeful that we can find an accommodation that where we can save the lives of people in, for example, in Libya,
Liz Peek, do you speak Biden?
I don't. Boy, I'd hate to be his translator in this upcoming meeting with Putin. I honestly can't even imagine where you'd begin. You know, I read, so here's a funny thing. You know, if you're on the White House distribution list, which I am unaccountably am, you get the readout from the reporters on the trip asking questions of various people, all known in print as senior administration official. And here's just a heads up. They sound about as baffling as Biden does. I mean, the language is terrible. People can't speak without I know and, you know, kind of and ums and ahs. Terrible language. So I'm not so, I mean, honestly, it's sort of like doubling down. By the time it gets actually to print, God knows what we're talking about. Anyway, look, I think some of the stumbles are just Biden being Biden, but honestly, confusing Libya and Syria, that's kind of a serious one, right? I mean, I was joking for weeks about how I was worried when Biden went to meet with Putin that by mistake he was going to give away Alaska. Well, you know, it's not inconceivable, you know, starts kind of talking. Anyway, more seriously, I think it's just incredibly embarrassing and humiliating that we have an American president whose staff, the people who work for him, his communications team, do not trust him to speak to reporters. And now we know why, because he very rarely gets through any kind of non-scripted exchange without a major boo-boo. And, you know, as president, you're really kind of meant to have your finger on the pulse and also know the difference between Libya and Syria. Most Americans probably don't, but that doesn't excuse the president, particularly when he was vice president, when Syria was like a gigantic big issue, right? Anyway, it's all very disheartening, I must say. And Libya was too, I shouldn't say.
Yeah.
But anyhow, what worries me more, honestly, having read the communique from the G7 meetings about 8 times, it's just as full of platitudes and non-meaningful comments as Joe Biden's campaign. I mean, I think Joe Biden just sort of goes through life streaming platitudes and cliches out behind him. They don't mean anything. For example, this is a serious thing. I was offended, and I'm still offended, that the G7 met a year after China loosed upon the world, quite intentionally, a virus that killed 3.6 million people, something like that, and did untold trillions of dollars of damage, caused so much heartache and loss around the world. This happened. I don't really care whether the virus came from a cave or the Wuhan Institute of Virology. My guess is the latter, but it doesn't even matter, because what we know, without any dispute, is that the Chinese knew about this virus. They knew how deadly it was, how contagious it was, months before they brought it to the world's attention. They continued to let people from Wuhan travel around the world, to New York, to San Francisco, to Italy, et cetera, carrying this virus with them, probably intentionally. They didn't want China to be the only country suffering economic damage because of this virus. And that's not crazy talk. That is actually what happened. And there's so much data and evidence, which finally I had a chance to read 2 or 3 weeks ago. If you read everything about it, there is just no question that they knew what they were doing. So a year after that happens, the leaders of the free world meet, and they barely mention COVID. They barely mention China. What are we going to do about China? How are we going to stand up to China, or more importantly, maybe punish China? Not a word about punishing China. And how are we going to stand up to them? We're going to make our international institutions, these global institutions like the World Health Organization, we're going to put the fate of China in their hands. Well, that's terrific. Just on a side note, and I'm going to stop my rant here any minute now.
It's okay.
The World Trade Organization, you may have heard that we're going to basically outsource to the WTO monitoring China's bad acting in trade. Well, today we had resolution, very welcome piece of news, about a dispute between Boeing and Airbus. States basically, the dispute was over whether countries are unfairly subsidizing their major aircraft producers. In the case of the United States, obviously Boeing, and in Europe, Airbus. It took 17 years to resolve. Okay,
seriously,
that's a little just symptomatic of how efficient these globalist institutions are. In other words, they're not. And to think that they are going to, that the WTO is going to anyway rein in China, after China, by the way, for the last decade, has stolen hundreds of billions of dollars of intellectual property from American taxpayers and shareholders, is ridiculous. And that's what we're doing.
All right. So I was writing down notes as you were speaking. You talked about the debt. And well, you talked about how all I was in my brain talking to myself about the debt. You talked about how the G7 leaders didn't really address China and how are we going to punish them for unleashing this onto the world, or are we going to punish them? And I don't think we're going to punish them because China owns each and every one of us.
That's right.
They
That's
can't.
Because exactly
if China calls our debt, we're done as a country. We're done. We collapse if they call
our
debt.
They can't. They can't. That's not going to happen. They can't do that because it would also crush their economy, and we could just say no. We're just going to say no. We're not going to pay you back. I mean, this is like an Armageddon scenario, and so I think, but it does. Okay. We don't need to get to that point. They're already. It's hard to come up with any large corporation, organization, even a nonprofit that does not somehow beholden to China or have a future that seems beholden to China, right? Look at the NBA. I mean, that's just one out of mm-hmm. a gazillion examples in the last year. You can come up with so many where no one wants to offend China. It's really sickening because China's not as big as the United States. We are still the dominant economy. We don't act like it. God knows Biden won't act like it. The one among the many things that Donald Trump did right was he used our economy as a weapon, as something that could extract concessions from Mexico on enforcing the border, or extract concessions from other countries on trade barriers, things like that, and on China. He knew if we put tariffs on China, they were going to be hurt. Well, Biden, that kind of mentality does not exist in this White House, and that is a real problem.
How much of that is because of a conflict of interest with the Bidens?
Oh, I think it predates conflicts of interest. It's just a completely different mindset. Obama, Biden, Anthony Blinken, I mean, all these guys, they kind of think it's like the Iran deal, right? I mean, they really think at the end of the day that if we give everyone enough money, they're going to behave well. It's just not true. Iranians aren't going to behave well. China's not going to behave well. China wants to overtake the world, and that is an ambition that is particular to them, I think. And my gosh, they will stop at nothing. And I think, I think the Chinese people are very proud people, and they're very happy with the aggressive posture of their leadership. And it does not bode well for the United States because we spend all our time running down our own country and criticizing our own country, and we don't have that kind of pride that allows our leadership to stand up and say, no, you can't do this to us because we're going to defend our rights and our territory. I just don't think that exists here.
Yeah, it is very scary what's happening, and if you have grandchildren, it's even scarier.
Yeah.
If you don't mind, would you just stick with me here? Because I have some other questions that I wrote down
sure.
while you were speaking that I thought were interesting,
ranting.
So I want to... Yeah, while well, you were ranting, but that's good. That's why you're a columnist, because you do good rants. So hang tight. We've got more with Liz Peek coming up here on the Todd Starnes Show.
From the front lines of the culture war, it's Todd Starnes.
Mary Walter in for Todd Starnes. And we are joined by columnist Liz Peek, who's been kind enough to stick with me because I have questions for you. I absolutely loved your rant. I truly did, which is why I have questions.
Thanks.
So given everything that you said, and I think you and I are on the same page, I'm feeling you, who's running the show?
Good question. I think right now we have a weird situation in the Democratic Party where the progressive wing of the party is uppermost, not because they reflect mainstream America or most voters, but I think because the leadership of the Democratic Party is scared to death of them for two reasons. One, in 2016, they bitterly remember that the Bernie bros, the people following Bernie Sanders, did not show up and vote for Hillary Clinton, and so Hillary Clinton lost. So that sort of shadow hung over the Biden campaign. And if you remember, Bernie Sanders was not going to be the candidate because, oh, he was too risky and people don't want to elect a Democratic socialist. Right. Well, that thinking was correct, but it didn't mean that Joe Biden didn't get together with Bernie Sanders and basically adopt a good part of his platform and ran with it to make sure that Sanders' followers came out and voted for Joe Biden. They did, and he was elected. And then the problem is Biden owes them. The second problem the Democrats have is that an awful lot of the fundraising and fever on the left is putting money behind Democrat candidates like Ocasio-Cortez, who unseated a long-term incumbent in New York State, a representative. And that's not the only one. I think there have been four now long-time Democrats, not entirely in New York, but two of them in New York, that have been tossed out by these so-called Justice Democrats-funded candidates. Well, unfortunately for America, Chuck Schumer is Senate Majority Leader. He's from New York State, obviously. And there is persistent talk that AOC is going to challenge, going to primary Chuck Schumer, and she has done nothing to shoot that down. She kind of muses about it and thinks about it. Well, as a result, Schumer, who is very much in charge of the Senate's agenda, is pushing this really left-wing agenda because then he can go to voters when his time is up in 24 and say, you know, I deserve your vote. Don't pay any attention to AOC. I'm delivering on your left-wing hopes and dreams. And in New York State, that is a really devastating agenda, like no bail reform, et cetera. And that's why we're in this pickle. And that's frankly why the Democrats are in a pickle, because this is not going to work for them long term. It may save Chuck Schumer's hide, but it isn't something that is going to work for them, I think, in 22, because, you know, today we had another poll. I think this was an AP poll on voter ID. I think it was 72% of the country believes in voter ID. So how is it that their number one bill since 2019, H.R. 1, now Senate 1, number one priority for Democrats is this voting overhaul, putting federal laws in charge of voting across the country, and one of the primary pieces of that is outlawing voter ID. It's really unimaginable that the will of the people is ignored.
But you know what, though? I will say we were just talking about putting Kamala Harris in charge of the two most unpopular programs they could possibly put her in charge of. She's unlikable, so maybe give her an unpopular, unpopular program to have to head up, and it's no loss. But here's the thing. There are people out here who just vote Democrat no matter what. Look what Democrat policies are doing to California. Look what they're doing to New York. Look what they're doing to other states. What happens? Those people pick up and they move to red states and vote Democrat again. Yeah. So, you know, there's a learning curve here, and they just seem they're like locusts. You know, they see fertile ground. They go over there and then they destroy it. And they're shocked that the same thing happened in the new neighborhood.
Yeah, the bad news is there is no learning curve. I mean, if we actually had a learning curve, then the people in California would look around and say, my, this place is a mess. I'm going to go to Nevada, and I'm going to vote Republican, make sure it doesn't become a mess. But by the way, it's not just inner United States. Why don't we look at what happened in Russia, in the Soviet Union? The whole idea of centralized planning is a farce. It doesn't work. And the more government intervenes in the marketplace, the more profound distortions there are in supply and demand. And I always remember that car they made in the Soviet Union.
The Yugo? Was it Yugo?
Yeah, something like that. And they made like billions of them, and they didn't sell any because it was a horrible car. It was a car made by committee that nobody absolutely wanted. So, of course, China has sort of confused people because it is a centrally planned economy. And
Liz, I don't mean to cut you off, but that music means we've got to go. But I have to tell you, next time I get to sit in for Todd, I want you back because this was a great conversation. Thank you so much for that. I really appreciate it. That was columnist Liz Peek. I'm Mary Walter sitting in for Todd Starnes. I'm going to get some of your calls coming up here on the Todd Starnes Show. Mary Walters sitting in for Todd Starnes. 844-747-8868 is the number. And if you would like to comment, you can go to the Todd Starnes page on Facebook. There's a Facebook Live there, and you can comment right there. Or go to the live show blog, toddstarnes.com. Lots of ways to comment. A couple of things I just want to do in this half hour because there's a lot to get to. I want to throw some questions out there to you. We were talking about, I just heard we talking with columnist Liz Peek and talking about Kamala Harris and what's happening with the Democrat Party and how they're embracing these far left policies that are really unpopular with the American people, including moderate Democrats. And there are moderate Democrats. I know some moderate Democrats. The Never Trumpers, they don't like the Democrat policies. They just didn't like Donald Trump. So they voted for Joe Biden, which I don't understand, but you do you. And so I look at that and you look at some of the numbers on like voter ID and the Democrats wanting to get rid of that, open borders, the Democrats wanting open borders. None of that works. And you see 9 out of the 10 House Republicans who voted to impeach President Trump over the January 6th riot at the Capitol are now getting primary challenges from candidates who align themselves as America First candidates. In other words, Trump's vision of Republicanism. Are you happy about that? Do you think that is the direction in which the party should go? And is that how it's going to shake out? I guess we're going to find out with these primaries. Is that how it's going to shake out? Would that make you happy? And has Trump changed the Republican Party forever? Because I think he has. 844-747-8868. Now, dirty little secret, I'm not a registered Republican. I've never been affiliated with a party. In my state, you can't register as an independent. You can register as a Democrat. You can register as a Republican, or you're nothing. You're unaffiliated, as they like to call us. And there is a large chunk of people in my state that are unaffiliated. And I live in a deep blue state that used to be Republican not all that long ago, but people fleeing red states came to my state and turned my state blue because they don't have the mental ability to connect the dots. And so they don't understand that what they're voting for is is the reason why they left the state that they were in to come to my state. So now I'm looking to flee my state to go to a red state, but I get off track. So you see Liz Cheney, Tom Rice from South Carolina, Jamie Herrera Butler out of Washington, Adam Kinzinger from Illinois, Dan Newhouse also out of Washington, Anthony Gonzalez from Ohio, Fred Upton in Michigan, also Peter Mayer in Michigan, David Valado, California, all getting primary challengers. John Katko out of New York is the only Republican who backed impeachment and also worked with Nancy Pelosi to approve a commission to study they were going to study the January 6th riot. They were going to study the riot. They were going to use that to drag it out to the midterms and then just use it as a cudgel to beat every single Republican voter over the head with. That's what that was going to be about. And he voted with her. So, but he's in New York. So that's probably why he doesn't have an American First challenger, because he's in New York. You really can't be a Republican in New York. You kind of got to walk that line, just like you see some of these Republicans who, like Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, who oftentimes will side with the Democrats. You've got Joe Manchin in West Virginia, who will often side with the Republicans for the same reason. Jory says, not everybody leaving the liberal states is liberal. There are big conservative pockets, even in liberal states. Very true. When my husband and I get out of our state, which is now a blue state, we will be people more conservative values moving to a red state to vote red. But I know we love Montana. I've been going out to Montana for, 20 years now. We love Montana. We've always wanted to move to Montana and live there. We have friends who live there. We have so many people out there that we know now. But A, we can't afford it now. And B, I don't want to live there now because it's been overrun with people from California and they have a Turn Montana Blue campaign. They love Montana for everything that it is. Low taxes, great schools. They love the lifestyle. So let's change it. So these Republicans who are getting primaried, do you think that this is the way the Republican Party is going? Is this the new face of the Republican Party? And that would be the Trump version, or as they're calling it, America First candidates. And do you agree that Republicans are going to do well in the 2022 midterms? That they're going to run the tables. Now, I don't like to think that way because I'm that person who the glass is half empty. I don't like to get my hopes up because then I can be horribly disappointed. But if I expect Republicans to do poorly and not flip the House, and they do, then I have a great day coming. Then I'm ecstatic. So I love it. I'd rather be pleasantly surprised than horribly disappointed. Well, there's a Democrat strategist out of Virginia named Nick Rathod, who served as deputy director for intergovernmental affairs for President Obama. And he did an interview with Breitbart on how the stalemates in Washington surrounding the Democrat agenda is hurting the Democrats. So everybody loved Joe Biden because he was going to handle COVID so much better than Donald Trump. He was going to take us out of COVID. COVID is really what crushed Trump's presidency. It truly is what crushed Trump's presidency and the mixed message and what happened in Georgia. There was a lot that crushed Trump's presidency, but it was primarily COVID. And but now Democrats aren't doing anything. Thank goodness that there's a stalemate in Washington, D.C. And he described frustrations about unpassed items like the For the People Act, which is bad and should not be passed, Joe Biden's infrastructure plan, messaging areas where the Democrat Party needs to improve if they want to be able to compete with Republicans. He said, we have to actually legislate now and produce results. And this is where some of the frustrations are happening. And they go back to the narrow margins that they hold. If Republicans can flip and get enough seats like in the House that it doesn't matter that Kamala Harris can break a tie, that's great for the Republicans, obviously bad for the Democrats. But he blames the Democrats' obsession with Donald Trump and not letting it go as part of the reason why they're having a problem. And he talks about Terry McAuliffe in Virginia, who's running for governor, and he's got a D after his name, and he has name recognition, so he's going to win. Doesn't matter what his policies are. People just know the name, and he's a Democrat, so yeah, he gets my vote. And how he keeps trying to tie his opponent, Glenn Youngkin, to Trump. And he keeps saying, he's a Trump guy. He's a Trump guy. And he keeps trying to do that, not realizing that, A, most people don't, the Democrats don't care about that. It doesn't sell for the Democrats. It's not a reason to not vote for him. People who are Republican or independent and were never Trumpers, I don't think that resonates with them. And people who like Trump, that does resonate with them. So their inability to let go on that is really hurting them. 844-744-8868, or you can go to the live show blog at toddstarnes.com or the Facebook page, the live feed, and you can leave your comment there as well. I want to start getting into this because we do have some audio that I want to be able to get to. And this is about Ashley Babbitt. You know the name Ashley Babbitt. Ashley Babbitt was the only person who was killed on January 6th. The only person killed was a Trump supporter who was shot by a Capitol Police officer. We don't know who the Capitol Police officer is. Now imagine if this were a black person shot by a police officer on the street, how different the narrative would be right now. Now, if you look at the video of Ashley, of the shooting of Ashley Babbitt, you can see, it looks like, and I could be wrong, so because we don't know for sure, but from what I saw, it looks as if the shooter was a person of color who shot a white woman coming through the broken window into the Senate. Now, if that were reversed on the street, that would be a big deal. There would be marches in the streets, there would be rioting to demand answers. No answers for Ashley Babbitt. And her family wants answers, and rightfully so. There are a lot of answers surrounding January 6th that we don't know. I want to know, was there a warning given before they shot Ashley Babbitt? Was there a non-lethal weapon that could have been used? Because that question's asked all the time. Whenever there's a police shooting, the armchair police officers come out and they get in front of the camera. Why didn't they use a stun gun? Why didn't they shoot for her legs? We hear that all the time, but not with Ashley Babbitt. Because, and I think part of it is because we look at what Ashley Babbitt was doing and we know that that was wrong. But if you look at the victim in a shooting on the street and a police officer shoots someone on the street, especially, we don't pay attention if the victim's white, but if it's a victim of color and an officer, it doesn't matter what the police officer's color is now. It used to be just white officers. And you look at that and go, well, that person was doing something wrong, like they were resisting arrest or something along those lines. There's no credence given to, well, you know, they were doing something wrong. Kind of understand what happened. We don't have that conversation, but we have it with Ashley Babbitt. The underlying thread seems to be, well, she was crawling through a broken window into the Senate. Probably shouldn't have been doing that. But was there a warning given? Was there a non-lethal means available to the officer? And we don't know. And her husband was on with Tucker Carlson this past week, actually last night, along with his lawyer. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to break here so that we have a lot of time coming back on the other side to get into that, to get into the audio and get his take because he's finally speaking out publicly and he wants some answers as well. So that's coming up next on the Todd Starnes Show.
It's Radio Free America. Todd Starnes.
Mary Walter sitting in for Todd Starnes, getting into Ashley Babbitt, and her husband was on with Tucker Carlson last night. Her husband's name is Aaron. He was there with his lawyer, Terrell Roberts, who's an attorney for the family. They are suing to get some answers in the death of his wife. She is the only casualty. Even though you'll hear five people died, one person died. One person was killed. You know, it was an armed insurrection. There were no guns or knives found, as opposed to those riots in Portland where they are assaulting the cops when it's found with, you know, weapons and you see them brandishing firearms on the street. And that's a word the left loves to use, brandishing. So Aaron Babbitt, Ashley Babbitt's husband, on Tucker Carlson last night.
Who shot your wife on January 6th? Do you know?
I don't know. Somebody knows. Somebody up in D.C. knows. I think a lot of people know, but nobody's telling us. And the silence is deafening.
I mean, you're an American citizen. Did you know that in this country, you can be shot to death by a government employee and no one explains who did it or why? Did that even occur to you before January 6th?
No. That never occurred to me. And furthermore, I never expected to lose my wife to political violence. So
what I have to ask, I mean, how do you feel about seeing her characterized the way that you have? How do you feel about the total lack of interest in her death?
It sickens me to hear what people say about Ashley. There's never been a person that Ashley ran across in her daily life that didn't love her and wouldn't remember her in some way, shape or form for the rest of her life. But this is the game. This is the social media craziness that, you know, people just run with a theory and just take off with it. And, you know, it's up to us. You know, it's up to us and the ones that love her and people like you for not giving up on it. So I appreciate that, Tucker.
Well, yeah, and it's in my case, it's nothing to do with politics. I mean that. You shouldn't be allowed to shoot someone. Cops shoot people all the time. I think it's often justified. I've said that many times. But we have a right to know who did it and why.
And I agree. We do have a right to know what happened that day. And her family has a right to know what happened that day. Again, imagine if this were a shooting on the street. It doesn't matter where. Pick a place, the inner city, out in the suburbs, wherever it happens to be. And a cop shot somebody dead. And we're not even going to tell you who the cop was. We're not going to release the camera footage, the vest footage. We're not going to tell you the investigation, nothing. We're going to tell you nothing about it. All done. The DOJ released their report in April saying officials determined that there is insufficient evidence to support a criminal prosecution of the Capitol Police officer. Okay, well, what did you investigate? What'd you find? Why do we not have the right to know that? Why? I think those are questions, obviously, that need to be asked. But the fact that her husband is not getting any information, he's suing the Metropolitan Police Department for refusing to identify the officer. So does that mean that it was a Metropolitan Police Department officer and not a Capitol Police officer? I don't know. I guess maybe they have some information. But if it happened on the grounds of the Capitol, the federal government owes somebody an explanation, because we know that on that day, there were a lot of dropped balls. We know that the Capitol Police went to the National Guard, went to somebody and said, we want to bring the National Guard in because we have this, you know, we've heard there's going to be some violence. So much so that we know that the FBI made some house calls to some people who were supposed to be there, and that there were some rumors that there was going to be some violence, and told them not to come to Washington, D.C. No one told President Trump about this, though. He didn't know about it. Right? And if the Capitol Police asked for National Guard and were denied, who denied them? Why don't we know that? Nancy Pelosi is in charge of the Capitol Police. You think that has something to do with it? Some of these unanswered questions because Nancy Pelosi is in charge of the Capitol Police? We know that there was miscommunications. We know that the Capitol Police were asking the day of for the National Guard for hours. A good 5 hours went by before the National Guard were finally authorized to go in and help. By then, the damage was done. By then, Ashley Babbitt was dead. We know that this all started while the president was still talking. The attack on the Capitol, if you want to call it an attack, whatever you want to call it, was already started. We know that there are people right now still sitting in what they're calling, they've nicknamed the deplorable jail, who are still sitting there because they're considered a threat and too dangerous to release because of what happened. That they're a threat to American society. They're insurrectionists. They're still sitting in jail. Yet in Portland, the people who assaulted the federal courthouse, also a federal building, they're having charges dropped. They're federal charges. Their charges are being dropped. And what's happening with the deplorables and the deplorable jail, it's basically solitary confinement, if you read the accounts. Slowly but surely, their cases are starting to come in front of a judge, and they're very quietly being dropped. Some of these people walked right in. There's video. And that's the other thing. The Capitol Police, the Capitol has video. There are cameras all inside the Capitol everywhere. They have the video of what happened on that day. Why haven't we seen it? If the Democrats are so anxious to paint Trump supporters as dangerous insurrectionists, you'd think they would release the camera video from when it started breaking the glass and coming in. Yet they haven't. Why not? What are they hiding? I think there are a lot of questions that need to be asked. I'm really glad that Tucker was doing so last night. And I think Ashley Babbitt's family deserves some answers, as we all do. So thank you, Grace. Thank you, JP. Thank you, Kyle. Thank you, Chuck. And of course, Todd, thank you for letting me sit in the seat. And thank you for joining me. I'm Mary Walter on the Todd Starnes Show.